You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Time and Room Podcast, our now established big-time podcast, Dane, all about lacrosse, featuring my buddy, Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. and NBC Sports Washington. Dane is my co-host. He grew up in Ohio. He played at Robert Morris, two-time captain there. He's coached at D3 and a D1 level, and he is now the head coach at St. Andrew's in Potomac. Hey, Coach, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. I don't know if established, that's a bold word. But
I think it's, big time, established. No longer new. We got a month under our belt. Yeah. Coach Tillman texted me during my radio show in the morning.
I know.
We got a big-time guest
on,
today.
Right? And just popped on.
Yeah, I mean, Tillman, we were talking about Under Armour, and he was getting a kick out of it. So we put him on, and we gave him a little shine so he could talk up his Under Armour a little bit, and then kind of did a little mini time in room episode with him.
I like it. I listened in today, and I got a couple texts. We're a little bit later in the week then because we got a big time guest, so we had to push back and move mountains to make sure that we got made time for Mr. Rabel coming on here in a bit. But people were like, when is it coming out? So one of those people was my mom, but either way, I'll take it.
It counts. I will take it. Yeah, you mentioned it today. We have a super special guest, a guy that really introduced me to lacrosse, really for the first time in a real meaningful way. And a guy who actually, it's a cool story now when you look back on it, he gave my son Steven his first stick, gloves and all that, and that is PLL co-founder and lacrosse superstar Paul Rabel. So Paul is going to join us in just a little bit. We had Paul on the radio show, and don't want to bore people too much with the details, but Paul's a Dematha guy, I'm a Dematha guy, and we met him, 10-11 years ago or whatever it was when he was just starting his professional career. And developed a really, really nice relationship with him. He's come on my radio show a bunch of times. And we had him on this past week?
Yeah, before they made the announcement of the, kind of coming out with their tournament, if you will.
Right. And he was breaking my balls for not having him on Time and Room yet. And
I heard that. I couldn't believe it. I thought he was kind of like messing. I'm like, he doesn't really want to come on.
Well, I mean, who knows if he really wants to come on, but who wants to really do anything? But he was breaking my balls for not having him on earlier. And Dane, I think, knows how this is, and we'll talk to Paul about it a little bit. I don't like to ask guys that get asked 9 million things. I don't want to be the 9 million and first guy. Mean? It's just don't want to add to his plate and try to, ask him to do stuff occasionally. And I certainly didn't want him to feel like he had to kick off our podcast. So we had him on the radio show. He said he wanted to come on. So I said, all right, I'm going to call your bluff, brother. And we got him booked right away.
Yeah, and it's been, and what a week to have him, right? And yeah. I think the timing of it, perfect. I'm glad you didn't ask that favor too early, because maybe they wouldn't have even known what they were going to do the summertime. So.
Yeah, plus we got the kinks out, figured out how to record everything, make the mic sound good. So we're settled in. We figured out how to use the Zoom. Yeah. So it's cool. And a lot of things going on in the PLL world. We can just touch on just a little bit. They had their second draft. Was it last night? Yeah, because we were originally going to have Paul on a Tuesday, and then he had a conflict. And then last night they had the draft, and it was very cool. I'm excited. Dane and I have been talking off air about it because there's a Marist kid, one of Stevie's buddies, the faceoff kid, Peyton Smith, was selected in the first round.
Yeah, not every day you get a, nothing against Marist. You get a kid from Marist drafted in the Professional Lacrosse League, and especially at PLL, and only two rounds.
I mean,
think about how competitive that is. Went in the first round. So that's
really cool.
Marist will miss him next year, I'd imagine, if he's winning, 64-65% of the faceoffs. So.
Oh, yeah, an absolute stud and a really nice kid from Carolina. I'm guessing if he was a little closer, he'd probably consider coming back, because it's a really tight-knit group of kids, really good player. But I know his mom did a lot of traveling to see him play every weekend. And just really, really excited for him and his mom. And, you know, how cool is that?
Yeah, now maybe Stevie can get the hookup, see if he can go to one of the games. Or, well, I guess no one's going to these games this summer, but maybe in a year from now.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, don't worry. I don't like to ask for stuff, but I'll hit up Paul for some tickets. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
So we'll go.
Well, like you said, there's no tickets for this one, but in a year from now, whenever fans can attend.
Well, you know what? Maybe all of a sudden I'll hold a camera or something. You know,
right, exactly.
We can find a way. But anyway, we should talk about it. I mean, the first pick overall was the stud from Penn State, Grant.
Yeah, Grant Amen.
Grant Amen, who, I mean, actually could have come back. All these guys actually could have come back.
That's the thing that's crazy, and I think probably, I mean, I wanted to hear from Paul about why they only had two rounds, but you don't have some of the big dogs in there because they did come back, and then you have obviously guys like Grant Amen that chose to left. It's almost like they declared for the draft.
Yeah.
Grant's like, I've done what I need to do in college. He had 100, over 100 assists, and he's... And it's cool. The kids have a chance to say, I'm going pro. You know what I mean? And
yeah, so
feel like it's a legitimate league. And, you know, not that the MLL wasn't, but, you know, it's definitely more legitimate now than it's ever been. So, so he goes one, and you have some big names. You have Yale kids, you know, Matt Gaudette went, you know, I think in the middle of the first round, but you also have a couple kids like, you know, the Marist kid, you have kid from Holy Cross, kid from Boston University. So some non-traditional schools, High Point, all great programs, but not, you know, often teams that are producing, you know, professional lacrosse players. So pretty cool to see there too.
Yeah, I just thought it was really awesome. And, you know, Amon is a kid who I think he would have been coming back for his sixth year. So I think at some point, you know, guys are ready to move on. It's a lot of wear and tear on your body. And if you're going to do this at a high level, you know, and you got an opportunity to make a little money, be on NBC. I really wonder if they don't have that NBC deal, if a kid like that doesn't decide, you know what, I'm just going to go back and try to win a national championship. You know, like you weigh that. All right, what do I want to do? Win a national championship and risk my body? Or do I just go out there and play on NBC? I mean, how cool is that? You don't get that many opportunities.
I know. I wish I could say I know what that thought process was like, but I have no idea. I was deciding to, you know, whether I should stay in Pittsburgh or move back in with my parents. But I don't know. It's funny, though, because, you know, Mac O'Keefe, who's, you know, Grant Amon's, you know, right-hand man, if you will, he's a lefty, you know, at Penn State, he is coming back. So that's, you know, he chose to stay. And but Grant will probably start, and he's going to play with Marcus Holman and Will Manny, two of the best attackmen in the world. So not a bad crew to start off your professional career with. So we'll see. I mean, it's interesting to only have two rounds, though, because maybe it shows how competitive it is to get into the league. You know, I don't know how many guys from the PLL retired or left after last season. So how many roster spots are actually open?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very interesting point. And the other point is our guys going to actually be able to be available for this? Because it goes from being a weekend commitment thing, where if you still had other side gigs, a little more easier to navigate than saying, hey, boss, I need 3, maybe 4 weeks off because I got to quarantine for a week or two. I got to play for 2 weeks. It's a big time commitment for guys that are working full time, too, in addition to being professional lacrosse players.
You're right. The only thing is that might be their saving grace. Like if we were in a normal setting and they were asked to take 4 weeks off, but no one's going into the office anyways.
It's a great
most
point.
Places.
People can work from their hotel.
Yeah. I mean, Grant Amon might score 3 goals and 3 assists and then go back and get on a Zoom meeting at 3:00.
Right.
You know, he's just getting out of college. Maybe he doesn't have a job lined up, but you know, some of these older guys I'm sure are doing double duty. I can't wait to talk to Paul. I want to know how the hell he does what he does as far as being a player. And then also basically being the, you know, the co-founder of the league. That's got to be some crazy
the guy's got
work hours.
He's got remarkable energy. I could tell you that.
Well, thankful to Red Bull, right? I mean, that's where it all comes from.
That Red Bull endorsement has really come up big for him. Let's talk about summer lax a little bit, recruiting a little bit, some news going on there.
Yeah. You know, I wish there was better news, but it's just basically, you know, still a holding pattern, but you're starting to see some things flush out. Right. And so the NCAA just extended their dead period till June 30th. So, you know, no college coaches are recruiting. And, you know, I'm speaking from my personal experience with Next Level, which is a club that I work with in the DC area. But I'm sure all clubs, you know, there a lot of the teams are attending the same events. All our events are now pushed back. So we have a July 17th date. and then two back-to-back tournaments in end of July and the first week of August. So I know you had mentioned that you saw Corrigan Sports is trying to put something together for high school teams at the beginning of July.
Right.
And, you know, as a high school coach, I'm just starting to look into that. I don't know how I feel about it just yet. But I don't know, man. I was just thinking about where can we practice? Hmm. I mean, part of this, people don't realize, like, it's great. We want a tournament. We need to practice to prepare for a tournament. And
right. And schools are, like, locking everything down. Like, you can't even get kids on your own field.
No. I'll get chased off.
Yeah.
I'll get chased off by people I work with.
Right. Which is insane. I think that's going to change. I have to tell you. And again, you know, every week we keep saying it. We don't want to get political or anything like that. But I mean, just you can be outside and be safe. Just do the research. So I think this is
I understand that, but who knows? Maybe our broadcast is national, but we are based out of D.C. Montgomery County is at a stay at home till June 1st.
Yeah, that's just weird. You can stay at home. You can still go outside. What does that mean, stay at home? Are they going to arrest me for going outside? I mean, come on.
Someone's got to email Governor Hogan, because every time he comes out and talks, he never says anything about practices.
Yeah.
We need someone with an athletic mindset saying, hey, can kids go out and practice? Because I were just up at a field the other day working with a couple kids, and you know, one of them, your son. And
right.
I mean, there were practices going on, whether they were allowed or not.
Full-on practices. Full-on practices with parents on the sideline.
Yeah, exactly. A
couple parents wearing masks, like that's doing anything outside. Right. But yeah, no, the outdoor stuff, I really feel like it's going to open up. It's silly. We're allowed to be outside. It's the best thing for us. We were talking about it before we went on the show. You know, that vitamin D is amazing for us. We need it. We need to be outside. We need to be exercising. And it's, you know.
Yeah,
it's
at least let's start some small group stuff, right? Get these kids the sticks back in their hand in like a group setting and start coaching them up. And
right.
And so, you know, we had Brett Manny on last week, and the NXT, group just put out their summer schedule. And what's interesting about that, because I had emailed back and forth with Cabal Maddox, who runs Madlax, and, you know, I'd asked kind of what he was hearing. And, you know, Madlax has different affiliations all over kind of the East Coast and Texas. And so some of their other affiliations are practicing.
Yeah.
If you're in South Carolina or Florida or, you know, some other state that's allowing it, those teams are practicing. So
right.
That's a whole nother, you know, can you host a tournament in North Carolina? Maybe North Carolina just says, I'm down here in North Carolina right now. And there are no rules down here.
There's no social
distancing. I'll tell you that right now.
I'm pretty sure you can host something in Florida. I mean, they've basically told professional teams.
Right.
If you come down here and play.
Right. I don't know. What do tournaments start doing that? Just say, we're going to go to a place where we can host.
Dude, here's what you need to do. You need to tell your kids, because at the end of the day, you feel terrible for those high school kids, you know, your seniors especially. Mm-hmm. Why don't you talk to the parents and just take a trip, do a road trip to Florida, you know, and just pick a couple teams and let's just go.
Are you going to get my insurance for that?
Insurance? I mean, have everybody sign a freaking waiver. These kids would do it.
Yeah.
Just go rent a bus, go to Florida, and who are the two teams we beat a couple of years ago down there? We'll go beat them up again.
Yeah, down in Jacksonville?
Yeah.
We'll go to Jacksonville.
Go to Jacksonville and beat them again. Let's do it.
We'll see. I like it. I like the idea. I like the enthusiasm, but we'll
I know
see.
There it's, are semantics and there's things you got to deal with, but if they're allowing it to happen.
With this Corrigan event, like all these high school teams in the area are trying to figure out what to do, and even we had talked about earlier trying to rally our high school coaches to put something together, but it's, you know, I want to say, yeah, we're going to do X or do Y and as far as event, but we can't practice right now. So I'm hoping to get some clarity on when we can start practicing some places and doing small group work so that we can,
right,
you know, be prepared for, I mean, the worst thing to do is say, hey, let's get our seniors back together and have no practice and then just, get our butts whooped and be like that. And that's the way we end the season. That's not going to be no fun.
Won't be a good look.
We'll see, man. We'll see.
All right. Well, why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break, even though we'll be back in like milliseconds. But we got to set up our Zoom and we got to hit up our guy, Paul Rabel. And when we come back, we'll come back with the lacrosse superstar, Paul Rabel. Please don't go anywhere. All right. We're back. It's my pleasure to introduce our guest today, a guy that's become a real friend who actually changed my family's life a little bit when he gave my son his first stick. Very cool story. He's a former DeMatha Stag. He won three straight WCAC championships by my count. He won two national titles at Johns Hopkins. He won two titles in the old professional league. It is a 13-time professional all-star. Won an indoor championship in the NLL. He's been called the LeBron James of lacrosse by the New York Times. He's the co-founder, along with his brother Mike, of the Premier Lacrosse League. That's right. It's the one and only, the legend himself, Paul Rabel. Hey, buddy.
Hey, how you doing?
How's that for an intro?
Big intro.
Yeah, that was a great intro.
How's I remember giving
Steven that stick. I remember he came to one of my camps probably 10 years ago.
He did. Little kid.
Falling out.
Well, little kid, but yeah, it's crazy. He's out at Marist and absolutely loves it. And it really did change our lives, you know, our family, because we fell in love with the sport through you. And I remember, you know, your brother was kind of, I don't know, you could explain this. I don't know if you've done it in previous interviews, but your brother, I don't know if he was kind of like doing your PR early on, you know, when you were doing your YouTube page and everything. And I think he was calling Lurch, one of the guys that does the show with me. And he was like, yeah, I want to get my brother on. And we were like, ah, it's lacrosse, I don't know.
Right.
And then at some point, we were just like, you know what, he's a stag, we got to put him on. Because Jason and I both went to DeMatha, and I was like, yeah, let's put him on. And then he was like, dude, the New York Times just called him the LeBron James of lacrosse, you know? And we were like, wow, I like that title, that's pretty cool. So we put him on, and then Paul's just been great to us over, you know, the last decade or so. And look where you are now, man. You got your own effing league.
Yeah.
Right?
Are we allowed to cuss on this podcast?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want. Yeah. Whatever you want, man.
It's interesting going back down memory lane. Mike, you know, now we're business partners and we talk a dozen times a day, and both live out here in LA. He's always looked after me. So he was working in real estate for his 9-to-5 gig, and then he's always been a serial entrepreneur. But when I jumped into pro lacrosse, that was probably my first year out of school. We were always obsessed with the Junks, and we love that two of you guys went to DeMatha. So Mike was like, hey, no one else is doing it. I'm going to pick up the fucking phone and call these guys.
Right.
And you guys responded. I remember being on the show early on. It was huge for me. And we talked a little bit about lacrosse, talked about going to school in Baltimore, college at least. And then we talked a little bit about Stags. And then I've come on like once a year since. And a lot of times I'm just – hitting you up on the side, and you're doing me a lot of favors. So maybe one day I'll be able to repay it. But
please, this is fun. More than repaying it. Coming
this
on our little
it.
Podcast,
yeah, coming on time and room. That's yeah, the favor.
Pretty cool. So I have so many questions, and I know I've talked to you about a lot of this. Talk about the YouTube stuff. Like, how did you know early on that that's going to be my niche, and that's how I'm going to kind of promote myself and also promote this sport to get it to a level where we can eventually, you know, be real professionals?
Yeah. Well, it's a good question. I've always, I think I have a bit of an acting gene that runs through my family. My uncle was an actor and did a lot of commercials. And then my dad, if you put a camera on him, he never acted, but he turns into a wild man when a camera goes on.
Right.
And so I always enjoyed it. So there was that part, which is important because a lot of people don't enjoy it.
Right.
A lot of athletes just don't like turning the camera on themselves. And that's fine. Yeah. A lot of people don't. Yeah. And very few people do, to be honest. And so there's this notion that because athletes are on television, that they're naturals on camera, and they're not. And you see athletes in press conferences shit themselves because it's just a different environment versus when you get to put your helmet on and just play.
Right.
So I had the ability to talk to camera. That always felt natural to me. And then more by necessity, when I had graduated from college, lacrosse had only been on, you know, national television really once a year on broadcast television. It would get picked up on cable or non-rating network like ESPNU or CBS Sports, but you're talking about Nielsen ratings. But once I graduated, it was like, okay, no one knows or really cares, or can, if they do care, find out what's going on. Facebook had launched their fan pages. So I remember when I was a senior, there was a guy by the name of Josh Lane who was early on YouTube, and he put together a highlight video. Mine was like the second or third lacrosse YouTube highlight video. The first one was Mikey Powell, and I think the second one was Kyle Harrison. I remember it started picking up, got like 100,000 views or so, which at the time was huge for any sport because it was just cat videos and trick shots at the time. And then as a result of that YouTube video, Facebook at the same time had opened up the age group for friend pages. So then I started seeing at a cap friend requests go above 5,000. I always accept everyone. Then I had 10,000 pending.
Right.
And they opened up their fan page. This is 2008. and I was shooting from my phone and typing, and I would get a bunch of response. And for me, it just connected that, like, okay, you know, without the coverage of the Washington Post or New York Times or certainly ESPN or NBC, then that doesn't mean there aren't fans out there. There's not a lacrosse audience. So I was communicating with them, and it just started catching on. Twitter jumped off, and then Instagram popped up, and I was always an early adopter, and you could just feel the connection with an audience. So I started investing more and started educating myself and meeting the people who are running these platforms so I could be an early adopter and grow. And then fast forward, I'd be lying if I said I knew the level of adoption those platforms would have gotten to. Now they're ubiquitous, and it's kind of a modern tool to communicate. Now it's essentially been the opportunity and kind of the waterfall for us to even start a league. So part luck, part necessity, part like innate enjoyment of being on camera.
I remember seeing some of your early YouTube stuff when I first got to meet you, and I would like say, all right, I educate myself on Paul. And your first videos were just like usually like stringing up a stick or something.
Yeah, it was shitty. It was bad content.
Yeah, but no, but it was something. It was a start. Everybody has a start. You should see my start. I mean, come on.
Well, that's the thing now is when I was early on YouTube, that type of like boring content, because the platforms were so novel, it worked.
Yeah.
So in other words, like people were just stoked to see an athlete or an entertainer, and it didn't matter how good the content was.
Right.
Now, as the platforms have gotten so good and the creators and the influencer on there are so great at creating content, that there's actually like a nervousness for athletes to come out because they're thinking, I've got to go from zero to 100. I haven't had any practice. And like, I don't know how to create a vlog that has a storyline and a story arc and like
right.
3.5 minutes. So, you know, for me, I got away with a lot of bad storytelling early because the platforms were so new. And now, you know, as you learn, just like in any line of work, you get better, and that's the way it goes.
Yeah, we had Brett Manning on last week, and he was kind of alluding to that, like a lot of athletes didn't want to, are nervous to kind of like jump in, especially obviously he's in the indoor league. But you guys in the PLL, that's one of the first things that I noticed when you guys launched, was it was different from a social media standpoint. And that's probably, you know, I'm sure comes from your roots doing that. But, you know, even I'm talking to Eric before you got on here about our high school Instagram, like that's how we try to sell ourselves. And it's so big, but the PLL has taken it to another level. Your content's crazy.
Totally. I remember this conversation very clearly. It was in probably in 2009 or 10. So I was a second or third year player in Boston in the MLL, which was the other league. And I was playing with Ryan Boyle, who's a legend in the game and one of the greatest attackmen of all time. And he was the founder and CEO of Trilogy, which is a big youth lacrosse organization. And I remember telling Ryan, because everyone used to break my balls for being on social, but I didn't give a shit. Mm-hmm. And I was telling Ryan, I was like, hey, man, like I think Trilogy should start a Twitter page. And he was like, it's just not us. And I'd be curious if he remembers this conversation. I was like, you're going to like it. And actually back then, I believe it was in either Wedding Crashers or I think it was probably more modern. It was The Breakup, where Vince Vaughn had called tweeting twanting. Yes. He was like, it's people who want attention.
Right.
And so that was the vibe. And sure enough, you know, all the coaches felt that way too.
Right.
Now the recruiting landscape is largely dependent on having an awesome social media team. Look at LSU football, Clemson football, Duke basketball. You're seeing Notre Dame lacrosse do it with Jerry Byrne, who actually comes from the marketing industry before he went back into coaching. So it's cool to see that. And then with regard to our league, I also come in with the perspective that, you know, Brett Manning's more of the norm. I'm more abnormal. And so what we do is we actually create the content for our players and we give it to them to post and we suggest copy for them. And we use a platform called Greenfly where it basically uploads for them if they want. Because the one thing about athletes is a lot of them don't want to do it, but they know that if they did or if someone did it for them, that it would help them and their brand and getting sponsorships and so on.
Right.
We're actually seeing at the agency level now a lot of businesses starting to turn to bring on athletes as clients versus small businesses because athletes have deep pockets in these mainstream sports and are looking for an agency to create content for them. So it's just a new world that we're in.
Do you remember? I remember early on, I think it was on Twitter, you know, when I was one of the early guys on Twitter too.
Yeah.
I think it was KD. Kevin Durant would just go on there and he was just like, mix. Do you remember any of that? I don't know if it, I think that was early Twitter stuff. And yeah, yeah. I'll be like, oh my God, this is Kevin Durant. And he's over there like DJing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the OGs on Twitter were, was actually
Shaq was early, wasn't he? Wasn't Shaq one of the early guys?
Shaq was early, but his name, his user, I'm drawing a blank on Ashton Kutcher.
Went
into a race with CNN for the first to a million followers, and out, and they were, it was on the entire platform.
Right.
It was, I think, talk about like early mover there. They like gamified getting followers back then. You can't do that shit now.
Yeah. All right, let's. We could go forever with you, Paul. I know you got a life. I want to touch on a little bit at Hopkins because they've had a coaching change there. And so I want you to just talk for a minute. Also, we like to talk about recruiting on the show.
Yeah.
You good? There you go. See, Paul's blowing up.
Yeah, getting calls. Yeah.
You want to answer? Go ahead. You can answer.
Paul Rabel, answer. That'll be interesting.
Mike, yeah.
All right. So we like to talk about recruiting a lot. First of all, before we talk about Coach Petro, I want you to talk about sort of – like, you were a stud at DeMatha. DeMatha wasn't necessarily a lacrosse powerhouse. I mean, you guys were winning WCACs all the time, but it wasn't like it had the reputation of, like, a Landon or something. What kind of attention were you getting on the recruiting trail? And then, like, what schools were you kind of narrowing it down to, and what put Hopkins over?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember a lot of people, even though I ended up being – Inside Lacrosse had ranked me the number – it was either the number three or four recruit in the country – there were still a lot of people saying that I shouldn't have committed to Hopkins because they had brought in like 3 to 4 straight number one recruiting classes and that I wouldn't play. And a lot of the conversation was partly about me, but also partly about the conference that I played in. So you're right. Like, it was really Baltimore, the IAC, but the IAC being specifically Landon Prep. And then it was the Long Island schools like Manhasset and West Jenny and so on. So DeMatha and the WCAC were building its reputation. We beat Landon for the first time my senior year, but it really started popping for me after my sophomore season. I had a good top 205, top 205. So I showed up there and I played well. And I just, you know, through my high school career, I look back and I played well on the recruiting tournaments. I wonder what happened if I didn't, but I did. And I remember I got a couple of letters because back then everything was paperwork, and I got a couple of letters early because I wasn't allowed to receive those letters at that time. And I remember we had to respond to a couple of those schools and say, hey, I'm not a junior yet. So anyway, once junior year came, I went to Blue Chip, and I was like probably the best midfielder at that event because that's when it turned. And I started getting calls from every coach. And then it's a small world. So they start knowing each other's recruiting lists, and it went from like quarter scholarship offers to half to three quarter to full all inside of like 10 days.
Nice.
And I remember my mom, cause it was like Duke, Carolina, Maryland, Virginia, Hopkins.
Nice.
And then I remember my mom having these calls and being like, looking at my dad and I and being like, Duke just up to a full ride. Like, Hopkins just up to a full ride. And us being like, oh, fuck, this is awesome.
Right.
So that was my junior summer, my junior year. And then it was also really important at the time because early recruiting hadn't quite popped out or early commitments hadn't quite popped off that I took all of my official visits. So I took 5 official visits. A lot of kids don't even know what that is now.
Right.
So I spent my fall visiting campuses and learning more about the team, the coaches, and the campus. And then I made my official decision, I think September of my senior year, end of September. And for me, what put me over the top is actually, I wanted to go to an ACC school. It was closest to the vibe of a DeMatha, where it's just talent across the board in way of sports. It's like, you feel the social life, the teams are good, the academia is strong. And Petro was by far and away the best recruiter of any coach. And like, his attention to detail was insane. He would have 45-minute conversations with me. And in hindsight, I've said this before, like, I can't imagine having a 45-minute conversation with a 16-year-old. Like,
right.
You know, as Petro was probably my age at the time, he was probably 34, 35. And he just cared so much. And I kept Hopkins along because I felt like I owed it to him. And then when I took my visit, it blew me away because everything was about lacrosse. And I had reached a point where I was now considered one of the best players in the country. And I knew I wanted to compete for a national championship. And I knew that I could do that at Hopkins. And I also loved their team and their coaches. So I remember I made that commitment and he called and we kind of celebrated. A lot of people were saying, oh, you shouldn't have done that because you're not going to play. And then I worked my way in the lineup pretty quickly and was a third team All-American my freshman year.
Turned amazing. Out pretty well.
Yeah.
Two national titles.
I remember every single person who told me that I wouldn't play too.
That's like Jordan, right? His Hall of Fame speech. Exactly. Yeah. I want kids. We do have some high school kids that listen. That most recruiting processes do not work that way, where you get full ride after full ride.
Pretty rare.
Wow. What a ride. You know what?
I wouldn't have had that had I not been patient, right? And yeah. I think the good news is we're past the era where coaches had the leverage because they could offer a kid in eighth grade. And so the reason why coaches have the leverage is just limited scholarships. So there's two levels of scholarships in NCAA sports, and it's usually revenue sports are called headcount scholarship sports, and then non-revenue sports, which is basically anything but football and basketball, are distribution sports where you can take your allotted number of scholarships and divvy them up however you want. So the reason why football and basketball always wait to national signing day is like if you're getting recruited by a school, you're getting a full ride. So money doesn't matter. So it's literally the leverage with the players. And in your non-headcount sports, your non-revenue sports in lacrosse, a full allotted level of funding is 12.6 scholarships. You have 44 players on a team. So these coaches are divvying it up, but that's 12.6 for the whole team. It's not for each class. Yeah. And classes sometimes have 11 to 15 guys. So a lot of your availability and funding comes from the previous year's senior class. So there was a talented senior class of like Adam Doniger and Chris Bolin and Connor Ford that had graduated from Johns Hopkins. So there was more money for the class that I went into. And I remember I wanted to go to Virginia. There was less money because they had more of an inferior senior class and they were more of a junior laden team. So that goes into it. So there was more, agility for Petro to get creative. And anyway, so going back to the latest legislation from 2 years ago is that coaches were able to put pressure on kids to make a decision by virtue of limited dollars. Now they can't offer a scholarship until July 1 or whatever, your junior year. So players get to develop like I did, because had I had to make a decision my freshman year, I wouldn't have gotten shit. Like I sucked.
Yeah.
I wasn't even playing at DeMatha my freshman year.
Right.
And then I transferred in, and then I got better and better. And by the time I was peaking, that's when the scholarship offers came.
You played club though, right? Didn't you play with the Crabs or no?
I played in one tournament with the Baltimore.
Oh, you did? That's it?
Yeah, I'm on all the marketing materials, but
hilarious.
I played in the Vail tournament with them, and I don't even know if I know club was a thing there, but we used to play in the summer circuits at Champ Camp. I'd play with DeMatha. And like I remember Landon would send their team. High schools used to send their teams, and then club really took over.
All right, so talk about Petro. You guys win two national championships there. This sort of iconic, I mean, Hall of Fame coach. And you look at the last couple of years have been tough, but to me, it kind of rocked me. I didn't think that maybe there would be a separation there. Did you know that this was maybe coming? Did you know that maybe there was some tension there? What was kind of your reaction? And you know, sort of talk about the influence Petro had on your life.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot to talk about. I'll start in like the nearest term. So we knew that his contract was up this year, but he's renewed a couple of times over the last 6 or 7 years. And look, this guy's been with the program for 20 years, one of the greatest coaches of all time, and certainly the only guy ever to have won Player of the Year in Division One, Coach of the Year in Division One, a national championship as a player, national championship as a coach. Like, he's outstanding. I'd said how he is as a recruit. Obviously, I'm partial, but if you look at other people who have weighed in on the conversation, especially over these last several weeks, guys who went to other schools say the same thing. Johns Hopkins lacrosse is like Notre Dame football. It's much bigger than just coaching for a few hours every afternoon in the spring. I mean, he's hosting community events. He's a part of charities. He's speaking to Board of Governors at Johns Hopkins Board of Trustees. He's raising money. It's a high profile position. And I think that was missed on the administration, how much he's done. His graduation rate is through the roof. The alumni network is fully behind him. And they certainly haven't played up to his standards over the last 8 years. But you think about coaching and you think about generational talent and impact. And in my opinion, this is someone that you ride with until he walks away from the game, because the game, especially at the college level, is actually far greater than wins and losses. And by the way, they've won Big Ten championships over the last 3 years. They're the only ones to take Penn State into overtime. And they knocked off, they beat Maryland twice, which is like our rival. So if you just even look at last year, so that's like one thing, or like a high level thing around Petro and what he means to me and the university and the team. Now, I think the way that it was handled, in that during this global pandemic, kind of prior to his contract expiring, them kind of pulling the seat out from underneath him. And then most importantly, because even if the administration had felt, which they did, that they should move on and bring someone else in, to part ways the way that it was done. And, you know, I specialize in PR and comms and marketing. Like, that's what I do. And like, to put out a blurb essentially for a press release, and then any not type of like tribute or acknowledgement video, I just thought it was really poorly handled. And I feel for him, and I've spent a lot of time communicating with him, and I've told our administration that, and I've told other people who have asked, because it's just the way that I feel. And I wouldn't feel like I could look myself in the mirror if I was trying to politicize this answer. I don't think it was handled well. What I'm also able to do as an entrepreneur that's put in these situations every single day is bifurcate how I feel with the rest of the process, which, you know, Pete Milliman, who's now the head coach, he had nothing to do with that. He is coming from a position where he's the head coach of Cornell and looking at an opportunity to be in the chair of probably the greatest coaching position in college lacrosse. And so I don't have any animosity towards Coach Milliman or the staff that he's hired. And I actually am hoping that they do well as an alum of the school. So I'm like able to bifurcate that. And I think that's just really important, because you know, there's a lot of pressure on the school, the administration, and the folks who now have moved in this direction. I do think that it was handled very quickly as well. I hope handled well. And that's kind of the degree that I've been involved.
Have you been in touch with the new staff at all? Because I know only one's an alumni, right? So I don't know how the alumni network felt about hiring someone that's not an Hopkins alum. And obviously, he's done a great job at Cornell. But, I mean, there's been hiring John Grant Jr. and then Kester is the alumni of the program. But I don't know how they've been in contact with you and what the alumni has felt about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wasn't a part of the coaching selection committee. I would have loved to have been, but I wasn't. And
how do they not ask you? I don't understand.
I don't know.
Who was on the committee? Any former players?
Yeah, there were not nobody from my class, or even the youngest was an 05 grad. But the rest, it was primarily comprised of some board of trustees, and then two former Hopkins players, three, I should say, Hopkins lacrosse players. And then what led the effort was a search firm that they hired, and that was part of the release. So they retained a search firm, which was another conversation. And then they had a selection committee that interviewed the finalists, and then the decision makers were the AD and a couple of other folks on her end. So those were like the three layers. I wasn't a part of it. And then from what I've gathered is that Coach Milliman hired, or at least had as much autonomy as from what I've told in making his assistant coach hires. So it was basically a process to hire Coach Milliman, and then he's gone through the process to bring on John Grant Jr. and Jameson Kester. And I played with Jameson Kester for 3 years, and he's a great coach. He actually did some individual training with me when I was living in Baltimore, playing in both the indoor and outdoor leagues. So he has meticulous attention to detail, cares and obviously loves the game. But beyond that, I don't have exposure to John Grant Jr. as a coach or Coach Millman.
Let's now transition, because I could talk to you forever, literally. But I want to get into the PLL, because you've had a lot of amazing announcements and that sort of thing. I do want to give you one anecdote that we learned on our first episode with Pat Harbison, right? Who obviously you know, a DeMatha guy, yep. who plays yep. in the PLL. Great guy. I've gotten to know him over the last 4 or 5 years, and I just love him. He told a great anecdote where he was, they were playing in the MLL, and he's with Kyle Harrison. And he looked over at Kyle, and Kyle just said, "This ain't it. This yeah. ain't it. This ain't it, yeah. bro." And yeah. And he, you know, he was still a young player, and he's like, "What are you talking about?" He said, This ain't it." Yeah. And so I know that kind of sums up the feeling you had and a lot of the guys had. We don't have to go through it. I know you've told the story 9 million times. You decide to break off. Originally, maybe you're going to partner, but whatever. You do your PLL deal. You get the amazing partnership with NBC. Sort of when you look back on that first year, you know, what do you think of? What was the best success, and what are some of the things that you need to work on? And now we're obviously in a weird spot, but kind of when you look back on that first year, what was that like for you?
I mean, it was a crazy roller coaster ride. The impetus of breaking off was that guys were getting paid $8,000 to play in a season for an organization that really over 20 years wasn't doing anything to market the players, the league, the teams. There was very minimal transparency. There was no television contract, and there had been, a decade's worth of, from my involvement with the league and guys who were more senior to me, kind of athletes raising their hands to help. And kind of running parallel to that same time frame, we'd seen these other sports, niche sports leagues prop up and lean into the same media that we talked about when we started this interview. And we were just missing on all fronts. And our initial process was to try to go buy MLL. Our preference was not to build a league from scratch. It's insanely labor intensive. And also like having 185 conversations with players and convincing them to trust another player that like he knows how to build a business. Like when I actually was figuring it out, was hard. It was hard as well. So I would say, like you said, we've told this story before, but the biggest like payoff for me was the championship game and the oddity of like, I didn't have a great season. And it was the first time in my professional career where I felt that way. I haven't played in a championship in every season by any stretch, but I'm typically leading the league in points. It's just, I have a knack for that. And it's just like, it's an all time point getter in MLL history. And I was, three quarters of the way through my career. So I know how to play this game, but I was pretty fatigued and pretty broken in way of like back injuries and other stuff that I just
know you had a knee thing. I know that.
Yeah. I just couldn't commit what I had been to my craft and my bodily health. Cause I was committing to building the league. I've gotten some relief since that because you only have to build it once. But the payoff was that championship game. We had close to 15,000 people in Philadelphia. I was calling it from the sideline as a color analyst with NBC. And it was just, it was a sick game. It went into overtime. Our MVP tied the game with like 5 seconds left and then scored an OT. He's a Philly hometown boy and Matt Rambo, and place was going bonkers. And, it was just a moment where you're like, holy shit, how do we even pull this off? Like to this magnitude of having these, not only just getting the thing off the ground, but being able to build brands and identities around teams that fans fall in love with and players that build chemistry on field and you're going to fight another team over like all inside of 9 months. Like the idea makes sense, but can that actually happen? And it did. And so this offseason really started off fast. We had a ton of momentum in bringing on new sponsors, and then all sports leagues have had to deal with the immediate kind of global shutdown beginning on March 11th. But to your call out at the beginning of the question is one of the benefits of being newer and more nimble is that we can work faster and make decisions quicker, and we're single entities, so that means we don't have to deal with the 32 owners in the NFL and Jerry Jones and Dan Snyder pushing back on every, you know, sponsorship logo that's, you know, put on the right shoulder of a jersey versus left. It's just like there's thousands of pages of paperwork that Roger Goodell or Adam Silver have to go through to lobby their ownership groups and get any decision made. And in this case, that's what they're going through now. So the concept of compressing our season and building like a World Cup style tournament to be able to solve with health and safety at the forefront and still have a season where we can fulfill our sponsorship and our broadcast commitments. And then what we had kind of up our sleeve ready to go prior to COVID was sports betting, which is a huge part that obviously you know, handicappers and bettors know are really valuable to sports, but just, you know, non-sports business junkies don't actually realize the stickiness and even the validation. There's these old comedic sketches around sports, and like the saying goes, if you can't bet on it, it's not a sport. And so there's like real macro meta impact that we're getting from finally being able to turn on all that governance. And we're off. So it's not going to obviously be what we have, we're hoping for year two, but it could actually be a viewership kind of volcanic opportunity where, because we're on television and everyone's at least theoretically going to still be at home, and if we do a good job of marketing tune in, that we can get greater viewership than what we would have had in a regular season.
Whose idea was it? Who gets the credit for the idea? Hey, let's do this like the Olympics. Let's do this like the World Cup. Let's just condense
it's a lot
it
like
all.
The, I mean, it's a lot like the World Games. I was looking at that, the layout, like the World Games for lacrosse. You're going to have the round robin play, and then you'll see them in play. I'm pumped. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Who gets the credit?
We put the doc together, Mike and I, on a plane back from New York on March 13th. And we wrote down scenarios based off of getting back to work. And like scenario one was basically no impact because we were going to be shelter at home for 30 days. Our season doesn't start till May 29th and 30th in Gillette. And then like scenario nine was basically, okay, we're shifting training camp. We're not starting till the 1st of July. We're going to, you know, backfill in our league bye weeks. And then the last scenario was like, all right, if this thing just goes absolutely bonkers, unpredictably, and leagues are canceling, because that's how you got to think as an entrepreneur, is like, what's best case? And then what's absolutely worst case? And you have to stare worst case in the eye. And worst case for us is like, all right, you cancel the season. And so then what are you doing? You're losing all this revenue. You're how are you going to take care of the players? All this other shit. So this was like that last case. And so we said, all right, I guess hypothetically, what we could do with only having seven teams is host a tournament or our version of a season in one location. And then by the time the first week of April came, so like 2-3 weeks later, it became clear that that was probably the bet that we were going to land on come May. So let's get the house in order. So if we can be the first to announce, we can. And so we just started working on that.
You guys haven't named a location yet, but what's that process like? Because Eric and I were talking about before you got on here, just some states are opening up over other states. So I'm sure you're looking at like Mid-Atlantic in Florida, all that kind of stuff. But some states are behind or ahead of each other.
Yeah. So obviously state officials, governors, municipalities have to give the approval. So that geography is important. One. Then number two is the complex itself. So most of the leagues that get back, and I think some are, a lot are going to be following our position, but because they're so big, they have so many participants, they can't find a campus that can house 1,000 people, right? In a fully, you know, MLB calls it a bubble, but like a fully quarantined environment, which is just a safer environment if everyone tests negative and gets in and you basically lock it off. So that's our approach. So you got to find campuses that can do that and that can house everyone, not just your players and your team, but every single participant. So our production, our talent with NBC, they're all going to be quarantined in like in this like Olympic Village contained ground. So there's probably a dozen of those across the country. You're talking about like state-of-the-art sports complexes that have built up over the last decade or so. And then what we're looking at with our medical advisory committee is actually the last discernment is they believe that if we can target a state with fewer case counts, that is the lead indicator versus where our players are coming from. We were looking originally at like player transportation and where they're coming from and the likelihood of like the overall hygiene of the event. And they're like, no, the focus should actually be on the destination of the event, and let's try to pick the site that has the least number of cases.
What about from the player aspect? I was talking to a guy who you know, is desperate to play again, but you know, he's got a job and he's not one of these guys that's working from home. And so this is a big commitment because, you know, guys that are working from home, if they have other gigs, they can still do that. But if you like, you know, you're actually going to work, you got to tell them, I need 2 weeks off or whatever to quarantine, and I need 2 weeks off to play. Yeah. Right? It's a big deal. What's going to be the buy-in on your players? What, you have any idea?
Yeah, I mean, our players are stoked, and we and our top guys are full-time lacrosse guys. But you're right, there is a, call it 20% of our workforce are guys that have full-time gigs. And like demanding gigs. And, you know, this might be a lot of economic forecasters during this environment, they say this with recessions and they say it with environmental crises, is that oftentimes the notion is that the world's going to change forever when we're out of it. But they actually say that it's more about, it's a massive accelerator. So in other words, like, you know, if work at home because of new technology was 50 years from now, it just got 5 years from now, right? Because we're forcing ourselves to adopt that technology sooner. And for us, the example of that is, look, we're at a place where we launched this league, and a lot of the great professionals, because of the former league's existence, had full-time gigs. So we didn't want to launch the PLL overnight. Did I go in and out?
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
I'll just pick back up. So we didn't want to launch overnight last year and demand that every player leave their full-time gig and go full-time with us. But we do know, we've had these conversations with our players, that at some point this league is going to develop and mature into a place where you're either full-time or you're out. And so I think this is a little bit of an accelerated moment where we will lose some guys that are working on Wall Street because they can't take 3.5 weeks off. But they'll be back next year if they choose to. And I think that's just something that, you know, you have to make concessions around, you know, this unknown, which is a global pandemic.
What about like roster? Eric and I were talking about like roster sizes. So obviously it's a 2-3 week event where guys are going to be playing a lot of lacrosse in a short period of time, and they're not necessarily training. You know, they're training on their own, but they're not training in a team like atmosphere leading up to a season. So our roster is going to be bigger. I mean, what's that going to look like? Because I'd imagine we don't want anyone to get injured, but I'm sure just like in the World Games or in the Olympics, you know, you're going to have guys ready to go.
Yeah, our roster sizes will be bigger, and there's going to be no differentiating between dressed and non-dressed. So everyone down there, and we're going to release that information in the next week, but coaches already have like an earmark date for the middle of June to submit their final rosters. And then once you're on site too, there's no trades. It's just like, you're all in and kind of, again, that World Games or World Cup mindset. And so, we spent a lot of time factoring that in, making an estimation around total games. There's 20 games in 16 days, but every team's going to play anywhere from 5 to 7 games. So it's not unreasonable, but it'll certainly be fatiguing. And to the point of a lot of the self-work that guys are doing now, they'll evolve as we see the environments and particular states that guys live in evolve. Like, we have guys that live in Georgia that have been out shooting the past couple of weeks on their nets out in parks because they lifted their shelter at home. But our team, we get on Zooms and go through our playbook a couple times a week. That's why I texted EB before and pushed back 30 minutes to start this, because we had our Atlas call. That'll be more of the norm. And I think the coaches and the organizations that do a good job of accelerating that prior to arriving to the mini camp is going to be best positioned.
So you got the championship series, you got the gaming announcement.
Yeah.
What between now and then, what else is there? What do we have, some more big announcements? I mean, what's coming up?
Yeah. So we'll make some new sponsorship announcements. We had our draft last night. on NBC Sports. It was really cool. And we had some guys that like Grant Ament, who went number one, and he's going to be a great player in our league and probably for a long time. But beyond that, it really comes down to now us marketing and storytelling. And, you know, we have our editorial team and our stats team that are ramping up their coverage, but it's basically build and get ready to go once the mini camp starts in July.
We can't wait. We can't wait. Well, listen,
get your NBC pass, get it ready to go.
Yeah. How do they do that? How do people do this? Plug that, Paul.
Yeah. So we haven't announced our official TV schedule. I talked a little bit about it on the Jux, but a lot of the games, most of the games will be on network television. So the broadcast NBC Network and NBC Sports on cable. And then there will be, you know, a few games on NBC Gold exclusively. And that could all change depending on the NHL and if they get back, whether or not every single one of our 20 games are on television. So there's a little bit of malleability there. But the biggest thing around NBC Gold, which we just announced in the past, is $19 for the season. It'll take you for the year, is that we turn on international. So now people all over the country can tune in because you forget how big the game is with 63 countries that are governed and sanctioned by the now IOC, which, as we're an Olympic provisional sport, is if you don't live in the U.S., I mean, if you don't live in Canada, you can't watch NBC. So This is the first season where we've turned on international viewership opportunities. So a lot of our subscriptions that came through the last week and a half just to watch the draft were from outside of the U.S. And then people get the pass too, like they do any other league pass, to be able to rewatch games. And a lot of people, honestly, like, you know, have cord cut it and they are consuming live sports directly through the OTT platforms. And so we saw, as an example, on NBC Gold last year, where half of our games were on television, half of games were on Gold, is that even when the games were airing exclusively live on NBC and NBC Sports, that there was a 80% utilization rate through the app. So that means people who had the app, you would think theoretically got it to watch the games that were exclusive there, but they were also tuning into the games from their app even when it was on television. So that's like a major indicator of where sports fans' viewership habits are going.
Do they have exclusive rights? In other words, could you sell like Twitter? Did Twitter can broadcast the games too, or Facebook, or NBC has 100%?
Yeah, no, it's part of the rights deal that we struck with them. So they get all the live games rights. And then we could have, and we worked with Rogers last year, which is a Canadian network, to broadcast the games there. So we had the ability to go and cut a deal with different countries, kind of network providers. But we decided to keep it in family and just be able to flip on the international switch for NBC this year through their Gold Pass. But all the other platforms we create ancillary content with, so highlights we're allowed to do, and original programming or pregame, postgame press conferences, and so on.
Right. Any other last question? Any other innovations? Like, you know, like it's so cool talking to a guy like Rambo right after he scored a goal or something.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. Anything?
We're gonna ramp up. Yeah, we're gonna ramp up audio for sure because you don't have fans, so you miss like the crowd ambiance that we're so used to. I talk about this a lot with NBC, and it's funny because a lot of – even their coordinating producer doesn't know they do it when they do it. But if you watch an NFL game or a college football game, most of the game is just panning the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like it feels like a concert. It's exciting. It feels like live, on-demand experience and viewing content. And so when that's one of the things we learned too, and we'd play at some big stadiums and, you know, they'd be half full or – even fewer if you're at Gillette. And, you know, Gillette, we had 15,000 people there, but it seats 80,000. And that feeling actually ripped a lot of the energy out of the building. It's something we learned was like, damn, we exceeded our ticket sales goal for this weekend based on the model that we had, but it actually felt like a bad experience because of empty seats. So there's like real psychology in not having fans, which all sports are addressing now. Even late night television was weird listening to Jimmy Fallon and some of the folks in March when they were doing the show in studio without a laugh. And the UFC, I think, did a good job this past weekend because they leaned into the sound of contact. And I think for us, we'll have refs, coaches, more players mic'd up. We'll have tighter angles on field. We'll use the steady. I want us to use the steady cams more So those are basically the handhelds that are on a gimbal, so they're not rocky like a YouTube video.
Right.
But what you do is you position the viewer from the sideline so it feels more intimate versus taking that high game cam that you see in the NFL.
Right.
So different things like that. And then we're exploring new tech around integrating fans at home to the broadcast.
Are they going to be able to gamble? Like, right? Because that's the next thing, right? Yeah. We're live gambling. So can I do that? Can I the Archers are going to score next. Like, can I do that?
So that's live prop betting. So we have the ability to do that. That's going to largely depend on the gaming operators to feel confident in setting those odds. We will definitely have that for 2021. The only reason we wouldn't have it to that level in 2020 is that the odds makers don't feel comfortable because they'd lose the money if they're not as sharp as the lacrosse experts. But we will definitely have the line and spread, points, OU, and then important props like who's for the first goal of the game, halftime spread, quarter spread, stuff like that.
But isn't that what you're doing, though? You're providing them the analytics so that they can. But this will be like a learning curve year almost.
This is their first. Yeah, this is their first run at it, right? So
right.
They'll get really sharp after this year.
I'm just glad you're not going to do it because I heard Joe Buck saying, like, I think with the NFL even, they're talking about, like, fake crowd and fake crowd noise. And I'm like, are you kidding me? They're going to turn it into a video game.
That's not going to fool anybody.
I do not like that.
Yeah, it's weird. Actually, I tweeted this week, and it got a ton of engagement. So the Bundesliga is the first to do this. But they went and they worked with a printing co and basically went to their entire fan base and said, for $20, we send in your picture, like your image of your body, and we'll have a cardboard cutout of it and throw it in a seat.
Right.
And when the Chinese Basketball Association were the first to do it, they put fake people in the stands. I was like, oh, this is a mess. But I think it doesn't – that felt like a filler. This feels like a give back to fans who aren't in attendance. So it's like more sentimental. It might look shitty, so I'm interested to watch it when it comes on in a couple of weeks. But we'll explore that because a lot of fans are like, I would love to have my picture on NBC in a seat. And it just seems like kind of interesting.
So. You can see lax moms all across the country buying their kids their picture in the stands for the championship series.
And hopefully they send us a picture of themselves too.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. Lax moms in the stands.
Hey, Paul, you're the best, man. Love it. Thank you so
much.
It's too kind. It's Paul Rabel. You guys already follow him on Twitter and Instagram. That's Coach Dane Smith. I'm EB Junkies. Spread the word for us, and we cannot wait to do it again. For Dane Smith, I'm Eric Bickle. That's Paul Rabel. We will see you next time. Be safe out there, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.